Listen and stream the all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5 for the only talk that matter.
My name is Samantha Best, and welcome to the digital world here at Freedom 106.5 FM. And Karen sits in with us until 3. We have a lot to talk about, I know, but let's first start off with what you may have missed last week on the digital world. And yet last week we dealt with how podcasting can grow your business. We had a special guest with us, Kevin Valley, who is the host of the Caribbean Power Lunch podcast. Excellent discussion with Kevin. And I let Karen do all the recaps for us. So Karen, if anyone may have missed it last week, let's start off with what y'all explained to be a podcast.
Yeah, so basically, we dove into the world of podcasting. It is one of those tools that you can really help to grow your brand and grow your business. And a podcast, an audio podcast, is essentially a audio recording of your lesson or piece of education or entertaining. And we upload these files onto a podcast host, and people can listen to your audio-only sessions via something like a Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, Spotify. But they're very popular because they are one of the only mediums where you can passively consume. So, you know, when we spoke about blogs before, people have to read the blogs. When we talk about video, people have to watch the videos. But with podcasting, people can turn on the podcast. They can go and cook. They can go and work out. They could do something else while, you know, a podcast is just listened to in your ears.
And you know, that's interesting because it took me a while, actually. I was very interested in learning via podcast and audiobooks, but I was unable to somehow retain the information early on when listening to podcasts. I think I had to grow some neurons able to absorb energy totally via audio.
Right.
I don't know if you experienced anything similar to that.
So, you know, I mean, that goes deeper into, and I won't be able to speak in depth to it, but I know that audio, people learn via audio and it seeps into your conscious differently, which is why one of the things they'll tell you is, you know, if you want to have something stick into your brain, listen to it right before you sleep, put on some headphones, listen to it, and you're going to be able to consume that information a bit more. So I can't speak to it, but I know what you're saying because I have seen a lot of people do mention that.
Yeah, and I wanted to choose audio for that particular reason that you did mention about it seeping into your subconscious. I thought it would be better for retention and for long-term memory if I did learn via audio versus video and audio.
Yeah, so yeah, you know what? When I think about just my personal experience, I think some of the lessons that have stuck with me the longest have been from podcasts. And again, it seeps into you. It seeps into your subconscious. And I think because of how you're doing it, like I would listen to podcasts while I might be cooking. And I'm paying attention, but I'm passively listening. And it just seeps into me more and it sticks with me a lot longer. I'm gonna have to pay even more attention to that now.
Definitely. Also, why have podcasts grown over the years?
Yeah, I think because we live in a very fast-paced world where you don't always have the time to read. You don't always have the time to watch a video. But because podcasting is the only medium, or audio, I should say, is the only medium, because we have audio books, we have other different types of audio content. You have radio, right? Woohoo! We have radio, right? So with audio format, you can do other things. You can drive, you could work out, you can cook, you can do other things while listening to a podcast. And that is one of the number one reasons why it has grown over the year, is because it's the only platform that allows for passive consumption.
And for those who may be new to podcasts, what types of podcasts do they have out there?
They have storytelling podcasts, they have cooking podcasts, they have educational podcasts. You have podcasts where it's just one person and they're, you know, talking to you. They could be, you know, telling stories, they could be educating. You have interview style podcasts. You have group chats where it's a group of people that come together and they're all having a conversation. So those are some of the more popular types of podcasts.
Really exciting indeed. So basically there's a podcast for any type of niche or person.
Yes. And you know what? I myself had a podcast episode the other day where I was talking about content creation. And because I was talking about podcasting, I know one of the questions I often get asked is, okay, but you know, I'm in construction. That podcasting is not probably going to relate to me. Or I'm in something that's visual. Podcasting might not relate to me. And we're talking audio only podcasts, right? And what I did on that episode was I told everybody, hey, jump on Google, type in your industry, and then type in podcasts. So the examples I did was, one, I told people to look at construction podcasts. There's tons, hundreds of construction and contracting podcasts.
Okay.
Then I told people check out sewing podcasts, right? And, you know, we're doing it for fun, right? If you've seen the amount of sewing podcasts and some of the names, it's so creative how people have been able to, you know, do play on words and turn it into an audio podcast with sewing. And then I told people, hey, go, you know, look at baking podcasts and hundreds of baking podcasts. So my advice to anybody who is thinking that podcasting might not be for them, go jump on Google, type in your industry, then type in podcasts. See what other podcasts are already out there and listen to a few. And what you're listening for, listen for the angle. What are they bringing to the table in their podcast? And because it's audio, and if you're in something that requires visual, you know, listen to what angle they are talking about in their podcast. And that should give you some inspiration, because at the end of the day, even if you have a similar angle, your experience and your thoughts and your processes are going to be completely different. So you could have a similar angle to somebody, but your experience is going to be different, and bring that to the table.
Because I've been in broadcasting my entire career, which is over 2 decades, at least when I am picking a podcast, I look for certain things, maybe the audio quality, the structure of the actual audio package, I'm looking at the format, the interview style, that would matter to me. But would you say, Karen, that podcasting has any restrictions or any type of formatting? Is it that anyone could just turn on a microphone or record their voice and create a podcast, or do we need some rules and restrictions?
I think any and everybody can create a podcast. I think the only thing that matters is, what value are you bringing to the audience? Because I've seen podcasts that are 5 minutes in length. I've seen podcasts up to 3 hours plus in length. I see people who curse, who don't curse. I see, like I said, we are seeing sewing podcasts. We're seeing things that, in my mind, before just doing a little research, I thought, there's no way you could have done a sewing podcast. How? It has to be visual, right? But I've been proven wrong. So I don't think there's any restrictions. It really just comes down to, does your audience want it, or have you been able to create a space for your audience? Because ideally, any good piece of content is going to touch somebody out there. And that person should feel like they've found their community. So whatever your angle is, however you bring it across, whatever the length is, whatever you're talking about, as long as somebody that listens can come and say, hey, I love this podcast. I feel seen. I feel like this is the tribe. I feel like this is for me. Then you've done a good job.
And then who, in your opinion, should be creating a podcast? Let's say you're scoring on TikTok with your videos, or you know what? Maybe you just have a little book club in your community or at your church. Who should be creating a podcast?
Yeah, I think anybody can. However, I feel like you should be somebody that enjoys the craft, because it's different. There are going to be people that, you know, they know how they bring across information. They know how they bring across their content and their lessons. So the energy that you have for a video is very different for audio. And the energy you have for an audio is very different for a blog. So I think if you do some self-introspection and you feel like, hey, you know what? I could be very good on a microphone, right? I know for me, I started off at blogging because video was out of the question. I did not want to be on video, right? And when the blogging took off, I started to dip my foot into video. But video to this day, as much as I've done, is still not my preferred medium. However, when I started to do podcasting, it was like, oh my God, this is me. There's something about, you know, I don't feel like I have to dress up all the time. I don't feel like I have to perform in a certain way, because video is very visual. But podcasting, you get to express yourself. I'm in my zone. I'm in my office. It's me to myself. So I think if you do some introspection and feel like, you know what, audio might be for you, then give it a shot.
You're listening to The Digital World here at Freedom 106.5 FM as we give you a little recap on last week's discussion with Kevin Valley, who is the host of the Caribbean Power Lunch podcast. We discussed how podcasting can grow your business.
Listen and stream the all-new talk radio, Freedom 106.5, for the only talk that matter.
You are listening to Freedom 106.5 FM, where you can speak your mind. And if you ever feel like connecting with us, feel free to use our hotline numbers 627-3223, 627-3223, or 625-2257, 625-2257. You can also send your comments or questions via WhatsApp, and that number is 306-1065, 306-1065. As we give you a little insight into how podcasting can grow your business, and we are here with digital strategist Karen Rose. And Karen, most people will ask about this. How does a podcast help you grow a business or build a brand?
So a podcast really helps grow your business because it, for one, builds community. And when in the digital age, everything is about community. People want to feel like they belong. They're not just buying a product because they heard a fancy jingle or they heard a fancy ad. They want to be a part of a community. And with podcasts, you are able to build that community. You're able to educate or entertain in your respective space. And when people can learn how they can utilize your products or services as a business to help achieve a result or help them, you know, improve their own lifestyle, again, you're going to have that nice community that people are going to want to be a part of. So podcasting also is going to tap into a different industry or a different medium than, again, a blog or a YouTube video or video content. So you're going to be able to tap into a different audience as well. I think one thing that people need to understand is that social media works in a bit of a silo. So content on LinkedIn, that's one community. Content on TikTok, that's one community. All these different platforms are going to have a different community. And same thing with a podcast. So you want to participate in as many mediums, I should say, as you possibly can, or ones that you can maintain. But podcasting, again, it's something that is on the rise. And just the way podcasting is set up, it's a great industry or great medium to tap into that can bring long-term benefits. It also has one of the highest consumption rates of all pieces of content. Because just think, you know, when we watch a video, we might skim. When we read a blog, we skim through it. But with the podcast, we tend to turn it on and listen to the entire thing to go do something else. So that's also one of the biggest benefits to podcasting as well.
And we're going to be talking about the job market later on in the digital world. So can a podcast help you in the job market?
Yeah. So, you know, I think if you are in the job market, right, you would have acquired some skills or you would have an interest in a field. And where I think if you are somebody who is looking to break into a job market, I think one of the best things is that with a podcast, it allows you to interview people that are in the space. So you don't necessarily have to go out and say that you're connecting with people to apply for a job or you're trying to milk them to get into their industry, right? I think a nice way is to connect with people. And if you have a podcast, people love to talk about themselves. People love to be interviewed and showcase their knowledge and expertise, right? And this is a backdoor way where you could meet everybody in the industry. You don't even have to be the expert. Your whole angle could be, hey, I'm a student. I'm learning rocket science. I don't know anything. I'm in school for it. However, I've created this space because there's other people who want to learn about it and chronicling my journey of, you know, going through school to become a rocket scientist. But I've also created this space where we can interview the experts. And we can ask them all the questions and gain their insights. And these people are going to be more than happy to come out and come on your podcast and talk to you and shed some light. And again, that's going to allow you to connect and meet people that you might not have ever have been able to do that.
I don't know if you could share a little advice on how do you connect with people to get them to appear on your podcast?
So first and foremost, consistency. I think you don't just come out the gate and start to ask people unless you have already made those connections, right? So if you have connections in the industry already, then it's going to be easier if you're just starting your podcast. But let's just say you're somebody, you're starting the podcast today, you don't know nobody, right? My advice would be do a few episodes first. Go and do 5 episodes on your own, do 10 episodes on your own first. Because the first question that people who are accustomed being interviewed are going to ask, okay, no problem, you have a podcast. You know, give me a link or what's the name of your podcast so I can go and check out a couple of episodes. Because for one, even though they want to come on your podcast, they still also have to protect their brand. They also want to know, you know, why are we coming on this podcast? Are we coming on this podcast because this is going to help elevate my status? Or is this going to be a podcast where I'm going to be giving back and I'm going to kind of be giving some shine to somebody who is now coming up? And people are willing to do that. So if you are somebody who don't have any episodes under your belt and you are going to seasoned professionals for episode one, you're not really giving them any incentive to want to come on to your podcast. Again, we're talking about if you don't know them at all. So I would always say get to at least 5-10 is a very good number, because at that point, somebody could say, okay, they're at episode 10. I've listened to a couple. I really like where they're going. You know what? Let me come and appear. Let me give this person a shot. But episode one of one, I don't know your style. I don't know where this is going to go. I don't see any consistency. You might just stop after me. And that's it. And I would have felt like I've wasted my time. So that's the number one thing. And then jumping on a platform like LinkedIn, because again, if we're talking professional podcasts, jump on a platform like LinkedIn, search for your industries, see who is in there, see who is getting traction, make a list of who you would want, engage with people on social media first before you try to come and invite them onto the podcast. So those would be my two tips.
What I saw was very interesting. I observed someone locally who I would say they did a flip side on being on a podcast. So for example, they look like they're a little too busy to coordinate actually recording and uploading their podcast on their own. But what I did notice is that this person seems to be a professional podcast guest. So they're on so many different podcasts, of course, talking about the same exact topic on every single one. But when you Google them, they're like basically everywhere. Some of them don't seem to have many downloads, but I found it quite an interesting strategy if you were not able to physically put the podcast together for yourself.
So that's a strategy on the marketing side, right? That can help on so many different things. If you don't have your own podcast, but you know how to go out and pitch to get on podcasts, because I receive them all the time. If you see the emails I get, tons of emails of people pitching. Some are bots, some are sales professionals just doing outreach on behalf of somebody else. But because podcasts are also indexed by Google, and it helps when they appear on podcasts, because remember, right, you don't necessarily have to do much as a guest. You just have to come with your knowledge, and the host would have everything set up. We just gotta either come into the physical space for the podcast, or you're doing it remotely. But if you get onto all these different podcasts, when someone Googles your name now and they say, oh my goodness, this person's been on he's been on this podcast, it lends to the credibility. So yes, there are people that are going to try, that are going to be on a ton of them. That is a marketing strategy. It does help with building their overall digital presence.
Yeah, I thought that was very interesting indeed. It had me doing a little mind switch.
Right.
Like, you know, it's like, okay, I can't get the podcast together, but maybe I could appear on many of them.
Yeah.
So let's say you do decide to put the podcast together. What do you need to start a podcast?
So at very bare minimum, let's just say you have no money whatsoever. At bare minimum, you need your phone, and you could have a wired headset and use that headset to record the podcast. You can record using the audio recording app, and you could upload it to Anchor for free. And that's the absolute bare minimum to start a podcast. However, what you also want to keep in mind is that podcasting is it's something, because we are listening to podcasts in our ears, and you want quality so that it sounds good. You want people to feel good listening to your podcast, usually because a lot of times they're listening to it in a headphones. So I would always think about, even though I could start with a phone and a wired headset, if the quality isn't halfway decent, am I going to keep people engaged to listen? Because we're asking people to listen for 30 minutes, an hour, up to 3 hours for a podcast. Can someone listen to a crackly voice or not sounding good? Right? Now, you don't have to go out. The good thing with podcasting is that you don't have to go and spend a ton of money to get good quality. I would definitely recommend looking at secondhand microphones. And you want something that is a dynamic condenser microphone. And a dynamic condenser microphone, the reason why you want that is, like we talked about last week, that microphone picks up the voice right in front of the mic, right? When you have omnidirectional mics, and one of the most popular mics that people just always get is the Blue Yeti. And Yeti is one of the most popular brands for microphones. They do a lot of branding. It sounds good. So it's one that people just run and get. But the thing with the Yeti is that it's an omnidirectional mic. So it's going to pick up every single sound in the room. So we're in the Caribbean. We get a lot of natural sounds. We get the roosters crowing in the morning. We get the lizards chirping at night. We get the dogs barking.
But you know, Cameron, sometimes those ambient sounds do work for some scenarios.
I'm glad you said the key word ambiance. So when you have an omnidirectional mic, they sound like they're co-hosting with you. When you have the dynamic microphones, sometimes, depending on the quality of the mic in your setup, you might get it in the ambiance. It'll be in the distant background. So for me, sometimes I've been in situations where the rooster is like right outside the window and he's crowed. But because of my microphone, it suppresses that background sound. So it doesn't really pick it up in the mic, and it really does sound like it's ambiance. And I will shout him out and be like, hey, Rocky the Rooster, good morning to you. And I bring him in as a guest. But when you have certain types of microphones that pick it up and it sounds like they are right there with you, it could definitely be distracting. So you want to look for a dynamic microphone. Again, just jump on Google, do some homework, look for a used one, look for something $50 just to get yourself started.
And I would also give some extra tips there. You should have a pair of headphones so that you can monitor the sound that you are recording closely. It does matter when you wear a pair, or some people call them cans. It's totally up to you. And then some broadcasting tips there. You need to project that voice, and you have to actually throw it into the direction of your microphone. You can't just be moving around inside the room and the microphone's there. It's not magic, you know, so there's a little bit of microphone technique that is involved, and some confidence and projecting, and most of all, enjoying yourself on the other side of the microphone.
Yes, because people can tell if you are not having fun, right? Unless the podcast is something sad, but even a sad podcast, people feel the emotion. Right? But if you are dead, if you're not lively, I know one thing I've always been told, you know, say it with a smile. When you speak with a smile and you're having fun, people on the other end can feel it. So it does take some practice. I know for me, when I got started, even with blogging, learning how to inject my personality into a blog, same thing with podcasting, getting to that point where you're comfortable with yourself. If you are wacky and quirky, getting to a point where you're comfortable showing that side of you to the public. Right? So it does take some work. It does take some practice. You might not nail it. Samantha, I'd ask, was there some sort of practice you did before you would go on air to allow yourself to get comfortable being on mic?
Actually, I did what you would call upskilling, that I actually joined a theater group.
Oh, wow.
So they taught me, because we did on stage presentations for noisy secondary schools, we definitely had to learn to project and throw our voice, make sure that the child in the back of the auditorium could hear what we were saying. So that was my voice training that came when I entered broadcasting. I definitely threw myself into a theater group.
Wow. I definitely took a lot of notes. I think for me, I didn't have formal training, but I think a lot of the people that I follow are very expressive people, and just seeing them do their own thing gave me the confidence and permission to say, okay, if these guys could come on YouTube or come on a podcast and just be expressive, just be themselves, and sometimes that's all you need, but it took me seeing it and feeling like, okay, if these guys can be themselves, and they're completely different personalities, and they're finding success, and people love them for them, that actually gave me the confidence to say, okay, well, let me be me, and let me see who actually likes it. And so far, it's been a blessing. And I think I'll probably give a story from yesterday, maybe later on, but or if we have time, as to how that really, how me being me has really helped hone in on my message and showing up in the public space.
So how do you promote a podcast and make it grow?
So you promote a podcast. I would definitely say one of the skills that you want to learn to grow your podcast is digital marketing. There are free courses on platforms like HubSpot that teach digital marketing. Facebook Blueprint also has courses. Google Digital Garage has courses on digital marketing. And you want to learn how to grow that podcast because they're going to teach you marketing strategies, right? So the strategies that they're going to be teaching you are going to be, you know, things on website development. They're going to be teaching you a variety of strategies on growing the podcast. And with that digital marketing, learning how to build a website, market your podcast on the website, tapping into other guests, bringing guests on, they're going to be promoting the podcast to their own audience as well. That's another really good way so that you can tap into and cross-pollinate your content with other audiences as well.
And what would you say to a solo show versus an interview show? I would go with a solo show just because I think it's so hard to depend on getting guests regularly.
You know, that is actually one of the reasons why I've done a solo show. I like the fact, and not that I feel like I couldn't get the guests, but one of the things is with solo shows, I could record anytime I want. So I like to actually record, and I show this on my Instagram stories. I'm up at 3-4 o'clock in the morning, and I'm recording an entire hour-long episode at 3-4 o'clock, full of energy. So all the energy that people see, that's at 3 o'clock in the morning. So that's the reason I like solo shows.
So you're a very noisy neighbor.
Yes. How do you mean? Of course, I like to cause ruckus. But yeah, so I do solo shows for that. But with guests take prep work. So we have a guest today. We had to prep in order to have him, and we're going to have that discussion. So there's prep work that comes into play, right? When you're a solo show, you know the topics that you're going to want to do. So the research and the work that you have to do is going to be different. When you are doing a guest show, you have to do more work into them. You got to be able to learn how to bring things out of them to create that show. And then there's times where, you know, you might have a guest who they're dead. And if you don't know how to bring a personality out of them, it's a problem. All right. So there's some dynamics. There's some people that make it work really well. But I definitely would say that an interview style show is going to be more work. There's more nuances that you have to take into consideration. Get started with a solo show first before you do an interview.
And I would still go with solo show in terms of, let's say, working with a co-host. I've heard of many of the scenarios where the two hosts at some point, you know, they stopped getting along, or somebody got a bigger opportunity from the podcast than the other person, and the show had to split. And now these two people, well, at least one of them, have to decide, should I still do podcasting? And then even have to rebrand. So it could be sometimes, if you don't know how secure that relationship is, it could crumble in the future.
Yeah, I mean, that is something that you're going to always have to think about, especially if you're in a co-hosted show. Somebody might have more of the personality, but the other person might have more of the tactical knowledge in something. And when you guys are together, it balances out. But guess what? A lot of times, the person who has the outgoing personality can get opportunities and do something else, and they're going to be good. That other person who might not necessarily be that big personality, they might have to look at other opportunities. It might not be in the public space, but there's tons of opportunities out there. It's just really going to have to come down to learning what those opportunities might be, right?
Definitely. And just to wind up our recap on podcasting, what are your thoughts on the length of a podcast?
Do what your audience wants. So if you feel like 5 minutes is good for you and you're getting traction, then stick to that format. One of the most popular podcasts I listen to is a 5-minute podcast. However, if you feel like you got a lot to say and you can hold the attention and you have value to deliver, and that podcast is going to take you 3 hours to deliver that value and you're getting traction, then you do 3 hours. I think it's always going to come down to what your audience is receptive to and what you can deliver. So I know for me, whatever topic I pick, once I hit 1 hour, I feel like I've covered everything I want to say in 1 hour, and past that, I'm rambling. That's just how I feel. But I'm also seeing that my audience is receptive to a 1 hour podcast. So it works. It works for me. It's been working for my audience, and the podcast listenership has been growing every single week. So for me, that 1 hour is my sweet spot. Everybody's going to have to definitely figure out, you know, what am I comfortable doing? And is my audience receptive to it? And if it's receptive to 3 hours, great. If it's receptive to 5 minutes and that's what you want to deliver, great. Experiment what you are working. Look at the data, and that's going to tell you what you should be doing.
As we discussed how podcasting can grow your business, your brand, right here at Freedom 106.5 FM, you are listening to The Digital World.
Talk is streaming at freedom106.5.com.
This particular episode, I think it got triggered by, well, you know, Karen has these triggers. So if you check him out online, he's like a venting machine, right? Not a vending machine, a venting machine. And he was venting about the recent job recruitment for the cruise line industry that took place in Trinidad and Tobago. So Karen, what were your thoughts on that?
Oh man, when I seen it, I didn't know what I was looking at first, because when I was watching the footage that came out, we seen lines all the way down the block, we seen people scaling the walls, we seen people pushing through we seen security almost getting jumped. I'm like, what is going on here? This is a job fair? I'm like, I'm too short to be out here trying to bully people to get this job. I said, there has to be a better way, because no, I can't imagine what people were going through. And then when I seen some of the reports coming out in the media about the event and about the job situation in Trinidad, and I just kept thinking to myself of my own experience and other people that I'm around as well. Why is it that for me, I'm in a situation where I haven't applied for a job in years, but I get job offers on a regular basis? Other people that I know that are working for companies internationally, I'm like, yo, how did you get your job? Some of you guys are working at Disney. Some of y'all are working in Silicon Valley companies. And they're like, companies found them. And it just got me thinking about, how do we go about getting a job in Trinidad and Tobago? And in one of the articles I read, the author broke down how there's a job decline, but the metric that was used that there was a job decline was they looked at the classifieds, and they're like, you know, jobs that were posted in 2019 were at this amount, jobs in 2020, it went even lower, and now in year 2022, the job postings for classifieds has dwindled. And I'm like, who looks at classifieds for jobs now? So that's what sparked the idea of this conversation, right? And we spoke about, you know, personal branding and using personal branding to build your network and getting yourself out there and getting noticed. But then I think now we needed to speak to an expert. We got to speak to somebody who sees both sides of the coin, who is in HR, knows what the companies are looking for, but also works with the employees to help them become employable. So in this week, can we talk about this week's episode now?
We can, but I wanted to slip in there. So you were saying that, you know, asking who looks in the classifieds for jobs. And I would say people that maybe don't have that many skills. They may be restricted in their skill type that they had. And then you did mention that they were saying that there were engineering jobs that were listed as there as well.
Correct. Engineering jobs. So at first I thought, that was my first thought, that it was going to be a certain caliber of jobs listed in the classifieds. But then they were mentioning that, no, like, they're skilled people, people with degrees, people with PhDs, doctors, engineers, lawyers. I'm like, I don't know if these people are looking at for jobs and classifieds. Now, I could be wrong, but this is what sparked this entire conversation and why we're continuing, but taking a deep dive this week.
All right. So that's interesting indeed. I know a lot of people, when they think of the HR department at any company, that, you know, HR is just for the company. And, you know, they just organize the contracts for you to sign, and there's no friendliness in that department.
Yeah, and you know what? Again, we're going to be speaking to one of the most righteous men to either, you know, say that's a myth or say that is true. But however, what I like about the gentleman we're going to be talking about is, again, I know that he sees both sides of the coin, because he works in HR, but he also works with people that are looking to get jobs, and he works with them to help build their resumes and more. And I think, again, getting that insight, you know, what are the companies looking for from the HR perspective? What should people be doing to help make themselves more employable is a critical, critical topic right now.
And that's really good. You want to give us the name of your guest, by the way? You can give us a little peep into who he is.
I'm telling you, every week we need that drum roll. We need that drum roll. But the guest for this week on the Digital Age is none other than Akeem Branford.
Okay, so that's awesome that we have Akeem with us today to give us both sides of the coin when it comes to representing a company in the HR department, and also as a master resume builder, that he can let us know what the companies are looking for and how we can position ourselves in a good place to be considered a worthy job candidate.
Yes, he has to spill secrets today. We need secret sauce. We need to know what to do. Akeem, they're not calling me back. They keep skipping my resume. So we will find out.
Yeah, definitely. I'll give you my personal experience. I think I have a printed resume like once in my life, and I'm keen to ask Akeem if I did it the right way. You know, you print like about 100, and then you get, you get the manila envelopes, and they always say, don't fold the resume, you know, don't fold it, right? Oh, okay, I'm getting points for that. You put it into the envelopes and then you deliver them, and no one responds. I mean, where did the envelope go?
Where did it disappear to?
You know?
Yeah, and I think for me, the last job I got, the company had reached out to me just because of a lot of the content I was putting out online. It aligned with what they were looking for internally. So when they reached out, they were like, hey, we have researched you and we have essentially headhunted you. So there wasn't an interview. It was just a matter of, this is the scope of works. this is what we have to offer. We would like you to come aboard. And I was like, well, yeah, it made perfect sense at that point in time. But I think if I were to start job hunting now, if I ever had to, I wouldn't be printing out the resumes. I would be leveraging, you know, the platforms like a LinkedIn. I've built my personal brand up enough. So I'd be learning how to leverage that to go and get a job.
Well, definitely times have changed. So we have any parents who are listening as well, and they have children, grandchildren are going to be entering the job market. I think this is definitely a show that you need to listen to very carefully, because yes, the job market has definitely changed, and there are different ways for the new job candidates of Trinidad and Tobago in 2022 to enter the job world.
Talk is streaming at freedom106.5.com.
Good afternoon to you. You're listening to Freedom 106.5 FM, and on Fridays, as per usual, you are part of the digital world from 12 noon to 3 p.m. It's amazing, just because we have a digital strategist, Karen, with us, all of a sudden we become the digital world. Eh?
I know, eh? And it's his influence.
Yes, his influence has brought the tech world to Freedom 106.5 FM and to your radio, and it's quite useful because we have some fantastic information today. If you are part of the job market, you're looking for a job, maybe you're even an employer, this is going to be the discussion for you. So with us today, as we discuss the Trinidad and Tobago job landscape when it comes to employers and the job seekers, with us is Akeem Branford. He is a certified master resume writer and HR professional for over 15 years. He is currently pursuing a UK MBA in human resource management, and he holds the role of Managing Director and Master Resume Writer of Branford HR Solutions, a resume writing company, while working as an HR manager of a local credit union. And Mr. Branford is globally certified in HR management from SHRM USA, and he has spoken on the topic of human resource recruitment and resume building at numerous local and regional platforms, most recently being SHRM Bahamas. And he has also delivered masterclass training in resume building for the United Nations Africa, Bill Clinton Foundation of the USA, and the University of the West Indies in Trinidad. And outside of his professional life, he is an avid traveler and a foodie at heart. Welcome, Akeem.
Wow, good day. Thank you so much for having me, Samantha. I think my mother would be so impressed by that introduction of her only son. That was a lot.
You know, provided that Akeem sent us this bio.
My mommy will be proud.
Yes, it was so well written, Akeem. I am ready to have you write my resume for me just based on that,
course,
you know?
Of course, we will speak. Don't worry, I'll slip you a card.
Listen, so we got to stand. We got to kick this thing off right now. Me and Samantha were talking. Usually when we come up with these topics, we prep, we do our thing, right? And I got to thinking, resume writing. Akeem, you got to let us know how the journey started, because what gave you that motivation that just made you wake up one day and say, aha, resume writing, that is the career. HR, that is the career I want to go down. So give us a bit about how you got into human resources and resume writing.
Sure. Well, my journey would have started a relatively long time ago. I would have been a teenager. What I would have realized, I started my career at the lottery company in HR as an HR assistant, working with what I would consider to be the best HR manager in the world at the time. And what she did was just simply put me through a lot of, I don't want to say throw hurdles at me, but definitely put me through a lot of strategic and senior level HR activities. And that did include shortlisting, recruitment, reviewing of resumes, that type of thing. And I would see some of the craziest things in resumes. Some that I had no other choice but to actually keep record of some of it. Of course, blurring out the people's names, but some really outrageous things. And I kept wondering, do these people don't have the same type of experience I have in terms of a mommy who would guide me, or a dad who would guide me?
Right.
And I was worried. I was 19 and worried. And I started doing my HR certificate. And I had very close friends in my class who were job seeking just as I was. And I said, well, let me look at your resume, because I see what we do at the lottery company, and I would be able to tell you if what you're doing is good, bad, right, and different. And in my review, I would not even charge. It would just be for fun. For the fun of it, we come home by Akeem, we order pizza, and we do our resumes.
Wow.
And, you know, I mean, I'm not bad talking people, but sometimes, you know, you do all these things for them and then you see on Facebook that they post that they get this really big job at an oil company. And then you're like, wait, I did that resume though,
right.
You know? And I remember just feeling somehow like I'm contributing valuably to these people, but I'm not contributing valuably to myself. So I actually said, okay, let me start charging a minimal fee, like 100 or 200. I started doing it that way. And I did my very close friends' resumes, my family's resumes, and I find people were really reaching places.
Wow.
To the point where I did a resume for a young lady and I stayed up with her till about 2 o'clock in the morning. And literally the week after, I saw on BBM in those days, there was no WhatsApp,
right?
That she posted that she's migrating to Dubai to start her job in the oil industry. And I said, no, Akeem, you are on to something.
Right.
So Brand 40 Trust Solutions would have been birthed at that time. There was many other iterations and many other names before, but I zeroed in on the philosophy of my dad. Now, not to get too sappy, because today is the 6th anniversary of my dad's death, but
wow, sorry to hear
nonetheless,
that.
My dad, thank you. My dad worked in the oil fields for 30-something years, and I've never seen my dad stay home, never seen him bad-talk his employer. He went to work on weekends. He worked through his vacations. My dad showed what a true employee was supposed to be.
Right.
And he passed away in the line of duty as well in his work. And I decided that I want my company to be based on that philosophy. Quality, being able to be that model employee, and being the best at whatever your sphere of discipline is.
Wow.
And when I approach a resume now with someone, I literally try my best to initially remove the person from the job they're in.
Mm-hmm.
Because you are not your job, right?
Mm.
That is a big thing that employers don't like to hear. Because, of course, we want people with commitment, people working 7 days a week. We want them working 20 hours a day. We want that,
right?
From the employer side. But from the employee's side.
From the employee side, you know, you're talking about how the employers always want you to work 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, but you don't always want that from an employee.
No, you are not your job.
Right.
All right. So I always would make this, I mean, and all my clients listening to this would hear that I would say initially, if you were to wake up tomorrow morning and you found out that the company doesn't exist anymore, someone passed with a red, whatever color candle, burned down the building,
right?
The building doesn't exist anymore. So that company may not exist as a professional entity, but you exist as a professional entity, right? So if someone were to walk up to you on the street and ask you, who are you professionally? What title would you give yourself? So that is a very difficult question for a lot of people, because most people pre-COVID were doing their jobs for 20-something years comfortably,
right,
without any notion of that I may lose my job or I may be replaced by some sort of technology or anything like that.
Right.
So people tend to just see themselves as what they do. So in my instance, my badge says HR manager.
Right.
That is not who I am professionally, right? I have spent 15 years in HR and industrial relations.
Right.
One of the things I omitted from my bio is that I do hold a postgrad diploma in industrial relations.
Right.
I love dealing with trade unions. I love dressing up really nice and going to court.
All right, let's pause there to see if we have any calls from the local trade unions. Okay.
No.
Not yet. You can go right ahead.
No. But I do love it. It's a big part of who I am professionally, and there is a duality between human resources and industrial relations.
Right.
Most people who do HR, and I shouldn't say most, let me not be fair, but some people who do HR may be very afraid of industrial relations and vice versa, because they seem to be slightly polar opposites in a way.
Right.
So I don't want to discount the value of my IR side. So if you look at my resume doesn't state HR manager at the top. It states human resources and industrial relations professional. That's who I am professionally. That's not what I do at work.
Listen to me. I wasn't expecting that. And it's always amazing to see people's journey as to how they got into the things that they're doing. And that's a very humble beginning, starting with just doing the resumes for your friends over pizza.
Yes, really good pizza back then. Yes.
So, Akeem, now let's get into it, because there is a lot of value I know that you have that you share online. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to talk to you, right? So, given everything that we see online, people feel like there's no opportunities, there's no jobs, there's a lot of frustration in the market. You have, you know, certain quote-unquote influencers online talking about how companies are doing crazy things with job descriptions. We won't name that person. But is this a good time to be in the market for a job in 2022?
You know, I'm glad you brought that up, because my very close friends who know me very well would know that I always complain about the fact that, in as much as people are always saying that there are no jobs, for us on our end, we believe there are not many candidates. Now, I will be correct. I don't know. Just a second.
Check the line, Samantha.
There are a lot of people applying for jobs, yes. Right. But if I'm trying to hire, in my industry, if I'm trying to hire a loans officer, why is a veterinarian applying to the for the job? Right?
Right.
Now, you may have transferable skills.
I would say
skills.
That person has a sixth sense for, you know...
For processing a loan?
But seeing if it can be paid back, you know?
No, nothing is wrong with transferable skills, and we're going to get to that later on, because that is a big thing in resume building as well, having really good transferable skills. Mm-hmm. But if I'm recruiting a loans officer, I mean, I talk about my experience because my experience is really colorful after the last 15 years. If I'm hiring a loans officer, I'm expecting a certain level of, I don't want to say just behavior, but a certain business acumen. If your interview is 9 a.m., please get there at 8:45. Don't get there at 10 a.m. and quarrel with me, right? Don't show up with purple hair, purple slippers, a purple... I mean, some people do crazy things. What we would consider crazy things, but I don't want to... I'm not disparaging anyone. It's just that I think we need to go back to the drawing board a bit, because we're seeing that there are no jobs, but we're not presenting well for the jobs. Let me give another nugget here, right? People always tell me all the time, Akim, I'm so nervous. I have an interview tomorrow. I'm nervous. Do you know I'm nervous too?
As the person interviewing?
Yes, I'm nervous. I am nervous as well, because I cannot mess this up. I am the head of HR. I have to hire good talent. My general manager expects me to hire top talent. So if I'm interviewing you and you're not really hitting the mark, but I'm like, I just want a warm body in the role, and I hire someone who is just not hitting the mark.
Right.
Wouldn't I have to go through the same process 3 months later at the end of your probation? Wouldn't my boss now say that my HR person is not able to assess properly or not seeing what we're seeing now? Why my HR person didn't pick this up in the beginning?
So it's
really concerning for me, especially when I see, I consider myself to be relatively young. And when I see other young people who have the same access to information that I do, that they can go and sit down and read on the internet how to prepare for the interview, what you should wear. Please. I mean, I get punked for this all the time. Please stop wearing red dresses to interviews, people. Please stop doing it.
Samantha says this with a beautifully
traditional HR
red dress.
Dictates that you don't wear colors of protest, colors of anger. Red is an angry color.
I thought red was a representative of Trinidad and Tobago, as it's a color in our flag that we feel comfortable in red.
If you give me a white dress with black and red trimming, I can take that. But a stark, bright, fluorescent red dress. No, please remember, there's a duality here. I've grown up in traditional HR, and now I have to succumb to modern HR.
Right.
You can get away with a red dress for an interview, just not with Akim Branford.
Uh-huh.
But you can get away with someone else who may be into it. Now, I'm very modern. My ears are pierced. I have tattoos. But that doesn't hamper what I can do. The red dress is not hampering what you can do as well, but it's just still a little too stark. If you want to stand out on the interview, here's what you need to do. You want secrets and nuggets? Get your pen and paper.
Oh, we're going to get into that.
Right? I'm going to give you one. I'm going to give you one. All right? Remember, again, still hiring the loans officer. If I say that I want to interview like 12 people for the day, do you think at the end of the interviews I'm going to remember candidate number 6 and candidate number 7? I'm not going to remember them exactly.
Mm-hmm.
But what you need to do to make me remember you, call me by my name. As easy and basic as that is, you have a piece of paper in front of you. There's a panel of people. Take down their names, and when you're responding to them, call them by their names. People will always remember. Think of it like on an airplane.
Right.
You're in first class when someone walks up to you. Would you like to have some orange juice, Mr. Branford?
Right.
They call you by your name, and you're like, how does she know my name?
Right.
And you feel a sense of, I don't know, you feel good when you're called by your name.
You feel seen.
Right. So when I interview 12 people, I feel like candidate number 7 who called me by my name is the person I want to work with.
Gotcha. Now, moving on from there, in your line of work, I know you probably also keep a pulse check on what's happening in multiple industries, right? Do you feel like there are particular industries that may be more ripe for jobs right now? Because a big part of like the content and the articles that I had seen coming out was people are still pushing kids or people that are looking to change careers, they're still looking to go into the traditional big three, medical, engineering, and law. And then when UE graduates hundreds of these people, whether they're young, whether they're old, because they're doing a change of career, they don't have no jobs coming out. So I get asked all the time, what jobs would I recommend? From an HR perspective or from your experience, you know, what job, what industries right now might be some good industries to start getting into?
Okay, so this assumes that the person is now trying to get into their professional life.
We could look at both.
However, we do have a lot of people who may have studied something for whatever reason at university that they felt was good at the time or that their parents pushed them into or whatever. But what I think is important is that not only do you develop yourself technically, but given the pandemic and the whole landscape with COVID, you need to now learn how to manage projects. Regardless of what you do, do PMP or I think it's CPAM or something like that, where you can study project management certificate or an actual project management diploma.
Okay.
You have to manage a project. Even in my field, everything in HR is becoming a project.
Right.
Everything has a definite beginning, a budget, and a definite ending.
Right.
Gone are the days where you get into a job and you just stay there, you collect dust, you collect cobwebs, and you go home at age 60 or 65.
Right.
You can't do that. You have to innovate yourself, learn how to manage projects. That's just the way of the world going forward. But to directly answer your question, I see there are three fields right now that a lot of people are making that paradigm shift and going into. And the first one would definitely be project management. Everybody's learning how to manage a project, and you have to be able to do that regardless of what technical field you're into. Next, I'm seeing even just up to yesterday, my client is into built environment. So it's not necessarily exactly construction, but it's managing projects in construction.
Right.
So it's not wearing the hat and the boots. Of course, you may do that once a month if you want to, but definitely learning built environment technology, that is huge right now. And of course, due to COVID, the third area that is really becoming very important is business continuity, right? Understanding that your business must survive regardless of what is happening in the health sector.
Right.
Your business has to survive, whether it be virtually or, well, brick and mortar is definitely a thing of the past because Brand for HR Solutions has been virtual from day one.
Right.
Before COVID. Okay.
Right.
So yeah, these three areas I would say have become the areas that people are shifting into, right? Business continuity, built environment technology, and the mother of all, project management.
You're listening to Freedom 106.5 FM as we discuss Trinidad and Tobago's job landscape with regards to the employers. And if you happen to be a job seeker, and with us is Akeem Branford. He is a certified master resume writer and HR professional for over 15 years. And he is currently pursuing a UK MBA in human resource management. And he holds the role of managing director and master resume writer of Branford HR Solutions. So, Akeem, what are the industries that you would consider oversaturated?
Well, definitely accounting. I mean, everyone seems to enjoy pursuing a CCA. I don't know why. It's because it's so difficult, but nonetheless, a lot of people love it and they do it. And I think we get into fields where we think companies may need this and we may be there forever. But no, please understand, accounting is being outsourced a lot now too. A lot of people are starting their own accounting business virtually, and they're able to provide that cheaper solution to organizations versus having to have an employee on staff that they have to pay benefits to later on, that they have to give leave to, that they have to give emotional support when their dog dies and all of that, you know. So definitely accounting is at the top of the list for me in terms of saturated fields locally.
And we are seeing a lot of talk about an employer's market. What does that mean exactly?
Wow, an employer's market. They're making me reveal all the HR secrets, all the things we don't say, we say within our own HR groupings. An employer's market basically means that the employer can flex. He or she can do as they please. They can basically lowball and get the best talent for the cheapest salaries.
Wow.
It just kind of is what it is, right? However, one of the really, really, really big things behind Branford HR Solutions is ensuring that our clients understand the power they have, right? You want the job. You want to go into that interview. You want to ace it. You want to get the job. But guess what? They need you as well. The company cannot function without you. The company can't be successful without you. The company can't make money without you. If you don't come to work and get your job done in an efficient manner and push that bottom line and boost the revenue of the organization, then nothing is going to happen. So there needs to be a proper understanding of both sides of the coin. Just as much as you need the job, the employer needs you as well. So it is an employer's market a little bit, but things are shifting. I think a lot of people now are understanding their value, right? A lot of people are having coaches now. They're having people who can advise them. They have mentors. I have too many mentors. Okay, so you have people in your life now who are able to guide you, let you know here what. What you're bringing to the table is different. It's unique. My journey in HR is so colorful, it's not funny. The things I've seen, the things I've done. One of the quick jokes I can give you all is that I conducted a performance appraisal on Independence Square when I was 25, right? Those are the things you do to push your passion and to show that you're good at what you do. So when you go on interviews, you stand out because you can see that you've performed things and done things that other people haven't necessarily done, regardless of the fact that you all may all have the same qualifications and that type of thing. So you just make your experience different.
And, you know, the job culture in Trinidad and Tobago, mm-hmm. I would think the majority of us would say it's really about who you know.
Okay. I wish y'all could see.
A friend of a friend. You know?
I'll be honest with you. That just kind of is what it is, all right? It's something that has been a part of the local HR landscape for a long time, and it may or may not change, right? A lot of people have gotten jobs through contacts. I remember being on the transmission team at a local organization that was trying to do restructuring at the time. But in going through all their resumes from 1985 and from 1980, we were able to develop not only just job families, but literal families where mom, dad, and all the kids worked at the same organization, mm-hmm. right? So nepotism has been a part of the HR landscape for however long to now, and it's not going to change. My only thing is this. If you're going to get a job through someone that you know, at least make sure you're technically sound, right? At least make sure you know what you're doing. So if someone opens a door for you, fine. But make sure that when you get into that job, you're technically sound. Please don't be a contractor who has gotten a janitorial job and you don't own a mop. Right? Please don't be one of those people. If you're really struggling to get your foot in the door, for instance, let's just say you have a bad resume, right? Let's say you use the green template and the red template from MS Office. We'll get into that. Let's say you use those templates and you're not able to land a role. But your neighbor says, hey, we're looking for an accountant down by so-and-so. And you get through it. And you go and you do get through with the job. Please at least make sure that you are doing what you're supposed to do. You're technically sound and you can manage the role that you've got.
Wonderful. Because, I mean, to be honest, I don't always think that it's necessarily a bad thing, right? As long as you are, as you said, the person is technically sound and they're a good fit. And that kind of leads into, you know, what I kind of wanted to touch on with you. Is we were talking about a little bit earlier, the marketplace being an employer's market right about now, right? And, you know, I've talked about this online. HR professionals tend to sometimes speak about it publicly, always message me on the low, but we have a lot of jobs that we see where employers are packing multiple jobs into one, right? Now, what I want to know is what type of advice do you give to employers when they're looking to craft a role? Maybe it's a role that they've never had to ever do before, which is happening a lot. There's a lot of new jobs, new skills they've never had to. So we know they're going to be looking online. They're going to try to pull from wherever they can pull from. But if they might not understand what they're hiring for and it looks crazy because it might be, you know, multiple things into one. So when they're creating these job specs, right, and we're seeing the six in ones, what's some advice that you give to employers looking to craft that job role and bring about that new position in their organization?
Okay, thanks for that question, Karen. I have been privy to some posts that this person on LinkedIn keeps doing with regards to job descriptions that show hybrid roles. I think, just as I said before, we need to understand what job families are. Mm-hmm. There are jobs that are very closely related. Mm-hmm. For instance, the HR manager position may be very close to the HR business partner or even close to the senior HR officer, or some companies may have an HR strategist. These roles may be very close in terms of being in the same job family, mm-hmm. but they may be very different in terms of the level of autonomy, the level of authority the role has, as well as certain responsibilities in terms of being able to do certain things and not being able to do certain things.
Right.
Right. So I have seen what you're speaking about, where they push all these roles together, throw a $5,000 salary on it, and put a job description the length of San Fernando on it. And it's concerning, it is. And it does give slight credence to what people say about some HR people, because what is normally said is that it's just people who speak well and look well and may be some sort of model employee, and they put them into HR and hope that this behavior trickles down to employees. And it doesn't work that way. HR is a very, very technical field.
Right.
There are very technical aspects of HR that a lot of people may take for granted, because HR may be seen as one or two things. The person who may come and smile all the time and welcome you to the company and walk you around, or the principal office.
Right.
So it just kind of is what it is.
So what advice would you give to people crafting a role? Because I know one of the conversations is people go to a job interview, they'll ask the HR rep questions about the role, and the HR rep will say, well, you know what, I don't really know. We've just gotten the information from the manager, and the manager's who submits the information about the role. So when they're crafting it, what are some things that the employer should be looking at, or HR rep should be looking at when crafting a job spec for a role?
I think this is where HR research comes in, right? You can look at it from the aspect of compensation, because that's where my background is in terms of doing that type of work.
Right.
It's more in the compensation side.
Right.
So if you know how to cost a role and pay for it, then it's relatively easy to develop the job description.
Okay.
Because then you can work from the back forward. So you cost the role and you know that, okay, I want to have an HR manager.
Right.
Right. But I'm not sure, because I've never had an HR manager before. I've had an officer. So I know I may want to up the things that this person does, give them different levels of authority, give them actual staff below them that they have to delegate duties to, that type of thing. And also expand the portfolio. Then you know, okay, then I'm going to cost this role at about $20,000 or $25,000.
Right.
And then you can
work
backwards. These are the things I need the position to do. However, there have been hybrid roles. I've been seeing it a lot, where you see that someone has to do strategy and do, for instance, in like, we could say social media, because it's one of the newest fields.
Yeah.
So the person has to not only post on the pages every day, but the person has to manage statistics behind the scenes.
Yeah.
They have to design the content. They have to design the whole social media strategy.
Yeah.
That's not a social media assistant. That's not a $3,000 or $4,000 job.
No.
Right? You have to really cost what the role is going to, what you're going to pay this role, and then work backwards. And you can do it that way.
So let's switch hats for you. When you're working with your clients who are the employees, what advice do you give them when a lot of them are coming up and they're in the social media or the digital strategy world, and they've gone to school, they've gotten their master's in marketing, only to come out and see $6,000 $5,000. What is the advice you would give to your clients who is looking to apply for some of these roles?
Yeah, we have to kind of decide what we're going to accept and what we're not going to accept. Okay. I vividly recall being very young and eager, being about 23 or 24 at the time, and I saw a role that was an HR coordinator role, and I was an assistant for years, so saw this coordinator role, and I wanted it so bad, because I saw that it had real duties, and I was like, yeah, man, I could do this. And I lived San Fernando at the time, and the job was in the East, so when I got to the interview, after I took like 9 maxis and 3 cars to get there, the position paid $6,000. And I was like, Akeem, are you going to sacrifice going this far to get this experience for such a small amount of money at the expense of learning in your field?
Right.
So I think in the beginning, you cannot think about money. Right.
Okay. That's a very good point.
Yeah. In the beginning, I did not make money until I was in my 30s. I didn't make real money.
Right.
Until I was in my 30s. In your 20s, you have to really develop your technical skills, develop your ability to produce.
Right.
Deliver.
Yeah.
Those are the words of my mentor, Patricia Harris. She always says, deliver. Be able to just deliver.
Right.
And I think at some point in your career, you have to, I don't want to say suck salt, but yeah, you may have to suck some salt a bit and do the 99 roles for a small size. And then shortly thereafter, you'll be able to make money because you've now developed the technical ability.
You have that portfolio, that body of work.
Yes, definitely.
So in terms of the job market, Akeem, a reminder that we're speaking with Akeem Bradford, who is a certified master resume writer and HR professional for over 15 years. And he's here with us as we discuss the Trinidad and Tobago's job landscape. We're looking at the employer side and those of you who happen to be the job seeker. So Akeem, I also want to just switch gears just a little bit. Something that I think that I see observed in the job market in Trinidad and Tobago. So yes, there was a time that we would work for technically no pay. to gain that experience. But what about the industries where people seem to be, what they will say, undercutting one another when it comes to incomes? Does that do something to certain industries that make it almost impossible for someone who has a wealth of experience to be paid their value?
Samantha, I really want to say no. I want to say no, Samantha. I want to say it does not happen. That's crazy. No, it doesn't. No, but it does happen, right? There are industries where undercutting does happen. And I would literally almost blame the job seekers for that, right? Because things will only happen if you allow it to happen and if you accept it. If you accept that $4,000 rule that you know should be a $10,000 rule, you're a part of the problem, right? Now, in as much as I don't fault any decision that anyone does that aids in their own development, at the end of the day, you have to know the value that you're bringing to the table. If you don't work, the company is not successful. If you don't produce, the company doesn't produce either. You have to literally be able to bargain with the employer, be able to negotiate as well.
Yeah.
I always tell people, don't ever give one single figure when you're negotiating. Negotiate on a spectrum, right? You're able to say, okay, I would accept $6,000 to $8,000, but I'd like to stay on the higher end of the spectrum. So try to negotiate properly.
I saw this meme on social media where the person said, starting salary is $2,000, but you could work your way up to $8,000 later. And the person said, okay, I'll start later.
Yes, I saw that.
That's great. So, Akeem, now I know part of your title is Master Resume Writer. And right now, I'm no HR rep at all, right? But even in the content that I put out where I talk about, you know, the type of digital skills that people could get to land certain jobs or just to make themselves more employable in today's landscape, right? People still need to understand resumes. And I had an article talking about two key things that people could do to make themselves more employable is learning how to leverage LinkedIn, building that LinkedIn presence, optimizing their LinkedIn profiles. And then something that I learned from you, which is this thing called an ATS resume. And when I learned about it, I was like, so my Canva resumes have been costing me jobs? Let's talk about it. Let's talk about resumes. What does someone need to do with resumes right now?
Well, the Canva resume thing is something I see every day, both professionally and in my day job and in my business. Mm-hmm. And I think we need to be very careful because Canva is cute for what it's cute for. A resume is not meant to be a cute document. A resume is not meant to be a playful document. A resume is a very serious document. It's not Dollyhouse, right? Your resume is a job that is going to get you the correct salary to up your standard of living. So it's not play. So Canva resumes are cute. Now, mind you, my sister, I'm sure she's listening, she is an executive at a bank, and she was nominated to be on a board committee of the bank. And they asked her for a portfolio. In that instance, yeah, do your cute Canva. You're already in and you're going to do something that is relatively ancillary to what you already do.
Right.
But if you're trying to get into an organization, whether international or locally, please keep away from the Canva resumes. And for those who may not know too much about Canva, Canva is literally Photoshop for dummies. People tell us.
Yeah, I love it.
It's Photoshop for dummies. And it's colorful. It's playful. It looks like an 80-year-old did it.
Right.
And that's the last thing you want someone to say about your resume.
So what is, because I know you've spoken about this a lot. Now, what is ATS? An ATS
resume. It would have been nice to give a prize to someone who could tell us what ATS means, you know, but that's okay. I wonder.
What's the prize? You're going to write their resume for them?
And then you will Google it and tell me what ATS is. I'm just kidding. But ATS stands for Applicant Tracker Systems, right? An applicant tracker system is literally a piece of software that filters resumes. So for instance, in Trinidad, I still have the luxury of putting out a vacancy and getting back hundreds of resumes. And my very competent HR assistant would go through it one by one and see if the criterion we need is there. However, in the beautiful United States of America, when they put out vacancies, they're not getting 100 resumes back. They're getting 100,000 or they're getting 50,000. Are they putting their HR assistants in a corner to sift through that? Hell no, they're not doing that.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to use an applicant tracker system. So this piece of software, when you collate it in terms of what you need it to sift out, it's going to do that. So if I see my position requires a master's and 10 years experience, it's going to filter out all the resumes that does not have a master's nor 10 years experience. But there are certain little interesting things that you need to know about an ATS system.
Tell us. Right? Tell us all.
I want to know how to crack it. Tell me.
Well, you can't. But there are things that you cannot have on your resume if it's going through an applicant tracker system. A simple thing, and I mean, people always fault me on this, but it will not go through. We live in Trinidad and Tobago. A lot of people don't like to write out AND in the middle. They use an ampersand. An applicant tracker system will filter out a resume with an ampersand.
When you mean filter out, that it will just be totally
regardless
out
of if you have the master's and the 10 years experience, it's going to filter it out because you have an ampersand in it.
Wow. Okay.
So you can't use any special characters, right?
Samantha, hold on. We need notes.
We got to take notes. I've been doing this a long time. I think it's been 14 years.
Go ahead.
So,
go ahead.
Yeah.
You this is tea.
Yet no special characters at all in your resume, right? Now, a lot of people, and I do it as well, I'm guilty of it, I love to maximize on space. So mm-hmm. I'm going to put ribbons and that. You can't use a ribbon in a resume to go through an applicant tracker system. So whenever I get clients, I ask them flat out, where is this resume going?
Mm.
Is it going to the international market? If it is, I cannot put a ribbon. So it's not going to look cute, but it's going to look professional because it was done by me.
Sorry, what exactly is a ribbon?
Okay, so have you ever looked at a document and seen a line straight down the left side where you would put your bio data on top, but you'd put your education in that ribbon?
Yes,
yes. You
put
certain salient points because it's easy to read. So a local resume with a ribbon is perfect. It must have a ribbon because if you're just listing out things, it's going to look like an ATL just typed it up quickly. But if you use a ribbon, you're able to maximize on the space and also it's easier for the reader to pick up on certain cues quickly because remember, you have 6 seconds to get my attention, to get me to pick your resume. So I have to see everything I need to see quickly. So a ribbon is usually on the left, right? Yeah, it's usually on the left. And you're able to put in very salient pieces of information that you want your reader or the recruiter to get quickly.
Okay, all right. And then you're saying with the ATS system, you can't have the ribbon.
You can't have a ribbon in an ATS resume, no. So which means you need to maximize on your headers and your footers.
Very interesting indeed. Okay, so no special characters.
No special characters.
No ribbons.
No
what,
ribbons.
What else is a no-no for an ATS resume?
Well, we're not going to give everything, right? No, Samantha, we're not going to give everything. We're going to give most. You need to, at length of resume is what comes in here as well. ATS will filter a two-pager, all right? Remember, the ATS resumes are mainly the North American. The first world market uses the ATS resumes. However, fortunately or unfortunately, ATS resumes and the applicant tracker systems have permeated the Trinidad market.
You see?
Okay, so we have to start writing our resumes as such as if they would be put through an ATS system.
Well, I shouldn't say this, but you know, one of my resume lecturers always said that ATS resumes are the ugly stepsister of resumes. It's not a beautiful document. It's not cute in any way, shape, or form. It's very, very bland. Please understand that when you're doing an ATS resume, at that point, style is not too much of a big thing. At that point, content is what matters. So it's either you really are suitable for the role or you're not.
So the question I have to that is, how many resumes should a person have?
I normally tell people try to just have about 2, but you need to have your master Word file for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Don't ever send your Word file anywhere to anybody at all, right? Make sure that you keep your Word file
mm-hmm.
and you send out PDF documents to go out.
Mm-hmm.
Right, PDFs hide a multitude of sins, right? That's your Word document. But I always advise people have a really good, strong international resume. International resumes do work in the local market as well,
mm-hmm.
right? And have an ATS compliant resume.
So could you do a pretty resume?
Yeah, well, your local
ATS
resume could be pretty, right? My local resume has ribbons on it and gray and blue. And it's really, my local resume is beautiful.
Right.
But my ATS resume is not beautiful at all. It just is what it is. It gives the basic information. And however, I want to speak about length of resume though, because I see, I got a client yesterday, a 25-pager, right? I've done resumes for politicians who have resumes 30 pages. And please understand at that point that the document you have is not a resume.
It's a book.
It's a CV, right? We always talk about...
There's a difference between a resume and a CV. Yes. Oh, really?
And it's unfortunate that a lot of my HR cohorts use the terms interchangeably, and we should not be doing that. A CV is very different from a resume. A CV is done for a lawyer, a doctor, or someone in academia. So a professor needs to have a CV because he or she may have taught the length and breadth of different subjects for years, and they need to document that accurately. Same for a doctor who may have done very specialist surgeries, very specialist consultations in terms of medical stuff, and they need a CV. Same thing with a lawyer who would have done landmark cases and would have gotten amazing judgments and that type of thing. You can't fit that into a two-pager. It needs to be a lot longer. So at that level, it's a CV, or called a dossier. So a resume is a snapshot of a CV. So if you have a CV, that's fine. Keep it. Keep your 25-pager. Don't use it to apply for a job that requires a resume. A resume must be one or two pages.
So basically, you're saying maybe you will use that CV once you pass the application process and you're asked to maybe interview. You'll probably walk into your CV then?
You can, for your own edification, right? Because of course, I mean, if your experience is as long as mine, you forget some things along the way and little things you would have done and that. So you keep your CV for you. But please understand that you may see an advert that may ask for a CV and it may be an error. They may actually need a resume.
I'm thinking 99% of the time they're actually asking for a resume and not a CV. Now that you've explained exactly what a CV is.
A lot of people don't know there's a difference.
I'm amazed that this is the first time I've ever heard of that. It's always been interchangeable for me.
No, it's not. It's not. A resume is a summary of a CV.
All right.
Talk is streaming at freedom106.5.com.
This is Freedom 106.5 FM, and this is the digital world as we are having a very vibrant conversation on Trinidad and Tobago's job landscape, especially for the employers, as we have with us Akeem Branford, who is a certified master resume writer and HR professional for over 15 years. And if you happen to be a job seeker, getting some valuable information here. You know, Akeem, I'm feeling a little pain for you because you're like one of the magicians who's revealing like all the magic tricks. You know, you've got to probably get ousted by the industry.
That's what I'm thinking. People might start up resume writing companies tomorrow.
So I want to know because especially with Karen, you know, he's always bringing this to the forefront that you have to have your social media present. It's great for job hunting. So in the age of social media and personal branding, are resumes important, and does social media impede, you know, your job applications?
Well, I do think there is a relationship, right? Sometimes, and people enjoy self-expression. People enjoy putting everything out there. People enjoy sharing their political views. People enjoy sharing their very polarizing views in terms of sex, gender, whatever they want to talk about. But is it necessary to put all of that out there, right?
I just want to squeeze in here. Does that just make your job harder?
It does make my job harder, right? Because as an HR professional, I have to be careful of what I'm employing into my organization, right? So this is why I put on the HR hat. When I interview you, I'm not going to do it before because it's not going to impede whether you get an interview or not, but it may impede whether the decision I make. So for instance, a close friend of mine in the banking sector said, hey, Akeem, I have a resume for you to check out. There's a young man, and young man is bright, resume, look like I did it, you know? And fantastic resume, everything. And then I looked up on the social media, I looked at his name, and all I saw was N-word, political, polarizing statements, very derogatory comments about the government, that type of thing. Do I want that type of energy in my organization? Because I saw, again, a lot more posts, a lot of angry posts about just a grocery experience or just a taxi cab experience, and the person's very expressive, and none of it seemed constructive. None of it seemed as if you were doing something where you want to highlight a problem, where you want a solution. It just seemed like bacchanal. So when you're applying for a job and you have a very, very expressive social media footprint, you have to be very careful. Because exactly what you put out there is exactly what we are going to see.
So you are saying that HR and potential employers do check your social media?
Yes.
Okay, so we have cleared that up.
We do. I will say, though, some of us take things with a pinch of salt, right? For instance, I have a very, very active LinkedIn account, right? And I have used that to educate as well as to highlight issues. For instance, you know, I'm going through a little challenge with my car right now, not gonna get into it, but I used that to get the solution I wanted. I felt like I was not getting the type of service I wanted out of the insurance firms and whatnot. And you would not believe, within 2 days of me doing that post, the executive director contacted me and it was resolved immediately. So at the end of the day, you're using it for whatever you want to. I can't tell you what to post on your social media, but just be very careful that you may have to justify it or actually explain it at some point in the future. And there is some credence to what they say, that what you put online can never be taken down, because screenshotting is real, right? People will screenshot your post, will keep it, and you just have to be careful about what you say as well. If you have very strong views about the government or strong views as it relates to gender, that's fine. Nothing is wrong with that. But there's just no need to post it, right? So if you're looking to have a clean social media footprint, I always tell people, look into LinkedIn, right? LinkedIn is really a kind of cleaner, safer platform. You can go on and do your normal scrolling that you may like to do, but at least you may be edified in some way in terms of learning something, or you may get a video on there that you may learn something new about. Every time I look at LinkedIn, as long as I am on LinkedIn all these years, I learn new things as well.
So I want to interject here. Sure. So when you were mentioning earlier about taking on someone who is looking for a job seeker, and you said they are not their job.
Right.
Are we now what you are explaining here, that you will peep into that person's social media as a potential candidate? Are you now saying that, you know, it's pretty much you're blurring the line, because my social media should be almost my self-expression outside of my work?
Some things are just gross in nature, right? Some things just are the way they are. If you're one of those type of people who's very much into body image and self-expression, and you've chosen to have very artistic, near-death type pictures online, right? How can I hire you, put you to lead a team, when people can just Google you and find nude photos of you or semi-nude photos of you? I'll be doing you a disservice to put you into my organization where I know you're going to get teased. What if it's a rough environment type company where, you know, these people will find it, will look at it and have problems with it? I'm not trying to end up in front of the Equal Opportunity Commission to pay for your discrimination harassment case that you're going to bring up, because people will go online and pull your stuff. It happens.
I think that is, I think even for me, coming from Canada, that has always been a big adjustment, because our social media over there, we know our employers watch it. Mm-hmm. And we know that anything you post could be used against you. And it could cost you a job. It can cost you in some form or fashion, right or wrong. But now in our culture, all right, when we see lawyers, doctors, whoever, certain professions, right, and their social media is all stinking dirty, mm-hmm. or any of that type of event and that type of nature and that type of content, you know, how does that affect in the professional work environment?
It can in many, many, many negative ways, but I would choose to speak about the positives, right? Mm-hmm. I think if you're a person on social media who is sharing information, sharing education, talk, your opinions can be polarizing, that's fine, because mm-hmm. I did that a lot in the early to garner the traction.
Polarizing doesn't mean bad. So.
No, polarizing just means opposites.
Yes.
Right? So, for instance, HR people always followed with me with, so, okay, I probably shouldn't get into that, but I mean, nothing is wrong with having polarizing concepts mm-hmm. online. But in my instance, I remember being relatively unhappy in my previous job last year, and I posted a lot about different things in HR. And I got a call from one of the founding fathers of HR locally, and he said, "Hey, Akeem, I know you're doing your resume thing, but there's a company that is looking for an HR manager." Somehow, when they explained the job to me, I immediately thought of you. And I said, "Me?" Mm-hmm. He said, "Yeah, the company wants someone who's vibrant, who has ideas, who's able to be fearless against a board, or be fearless against, you know, people who may not exactly be into HR, because the company never had an HR manager before." Mm-hmm. And he said, "You know, I want to see if this may be a fit for you." And I would have interviewed. The first interview, thanks to my mom, I believe I speak well. So the interview was like about 2 hours long. We had a lot of fun just talking a lot of HR stuff back and forth. Then had the second interview and I landed the role.
Right.
So having a good, strong, useful social media footprint can work for you, mm. can land a role, mm-hmm. right? And I prefer that young people focus on the positives right now.
Yeah.
Focus on what you can do better and what you can do properly that will land you a role. don't focus on the, you know, PNM, UNC government issues. Don't go down that road. Think it in your mind, leave it there. But when you're going onto social media, try to be constructive, right? Make sure that your social media footprint edifies. Make sure that there's some sort of nugget of gold in there that when people look at your page, you can go after and say, hey, you know, I checked out Samantha's page and she's talking a lot about broadcast journalism and she's talking a lot about what you can do better for up-and-coming journalists who wants to learn and how to get into the industry, mm-hmm. that type of thing, what internships they can get into. So you have a constructive social
media. Or have healthy fun, like thing that's not going to land you into
questions. Please don't get me wrong. You use the word healthy there. That sounded like a salad to me.
No.
That upsets me. Sorry. That upsets me. What I'm saying, though, is you can still have fun.
Yeah.
Right? Please don't think I don't have fun on my page. I have a lot of fun on my page. I post a lot of funny things now and again because there's a lot of fun aspects of HR that I can share. It's not just about me being like, do your resume, interview well, and you will get the job. No. Come on, you can have personality. Right. I vividly recall being on an interview years ago, and I guess it was their strategy to try to confuse me. So one director asked me a question, the other one, then in the middle of while I was answering, another one cut me off and started to ask another question. And I politely told her, with all due respect, Ms. Williams, I would really want to give my full attention to this question because I want to make sure you all understand what I have to say about it. Because when I come in here, that is exactly what I'm going to do. I was talking about HR auditing,
right,
which is something you have to do in your first 3 months in an HR job. So I was telling him about that, and immediately while I was telling him, she cut me off. And at the end of the interview, she said, young man, I don't care if you get this job or not, I have to work with you. Because anybody who could respectfully put me in my place is someone I want to work with.
Mm.
So in terms of job hunting, you're saying that you could use that social media for positive, for good. Mm-hmm. And I was in pre-production talking to Karen that I remember that TikTok now has TikTok resumes. Was it to check out if it rolled out in the Caribbean yet? We're not too sure. But that means they're using video type to basically apply for jobs. Do you think the local job hunting market has changed and how you should be job hunting?
It has changed. But with regards to that TikTok thing, no, we're not ready for that. It just is what it is. We're not ready for it. All right. We still have CEOs and managing directors who are not tech savvy. It just is what it is. And we are still in that landscape of paper. We're still in that landscape of email now and again. Well, mostly email than paper now. But we're not yet at the video stage. However, we do have some progressive managing directors who may say, hey, well, let me look at it. But I will still want the paper or still want the email to follow up. But I have no problem looking at what they're doing because that person may want to feel like they want to understand what the Gen Z's. Yeah, what the Gen Z's are doing. Yeah,
I have the same problem with the Gen Z's too.
I get confused. I think I'm a millennial. I'm not sure. But I want to go back to what you said in that question as it relates to the change in landscape of applying for a job.
Mm-hmm.
In my parents' days, in the 80s, when they were looking for jobs, they would have had to have a really, really good handwriting. And they had to handwrite their applications to show the employer that they can write well.
I wasn't getting a job.
Well, my handwriting has deteriorated, but
it is what it is.
But back then you had to write well. You had to show an employer that you can write well because there were no typewriters and there were no computers. Mm-hmm. So you had to show that your communication was on point, right? Now, this is where the Manila folder came in. So you did your beautiful resume using that red or green template that they have in Word. And you print it out, you put it in your manila folder, or some people use the really expensive plastic folders. I remember getting those back then. We used it afterwards when you gave it to us. Thank you very much for your folders, right? We definitely used it after. But people did that for presentation and to show seriousness, but it's not that necessary anymore. What shows seriousness for me in a document, in a resume document, you see, when you have a strong skills bank, that gives me my HR orgasm. I'm just being honest. That gets me going when I see it. And it offends me when you send me a resume with 4 skills on it. Am I paying you for 4 skills? Some people have no skills bank as well on their resume. What am I paying you for? When I pick up this document, I must immediately cost you. Because as I said, I have a compensation background. So when I look at this, I'm like, okay, how am I going to pay you? You have 4 skills. You have time management, attention to detail, result-oriented, and honest. Am I paying you $20,000 to be honest? Am I paying you $25,000 a month for time management? No, but I'm going to pay you $25,000 if the accounting field you tell me that you're good at drafting journals, accounts receivables, accounts payables. you're good at, you know, all those funny HR people, afraid accounts. So I don't know why where I was going with that. But at the end of the day, you have to show a really strong skills bank. The flow of your resume starts off with your bio data, not too much. Please don't give me your street address. I don't need that. I just need to know where you live in terms of a general area, your phone number, your LinkedIn. And I want a strong professional summary. Now, if you're under 25, I'll accept an objective because you're showing me you have a brain, you have a trajectory, and you're thinking. So an objective shows me, okay, this person under 25 is working towards something. But as soon as you cross 25, I need a professional summary. Because at that point, you must have had a couple years experience. You must have developed some sort of education. So you have like a one-year certificate or hopefully your bachelor's. Well, the way these young people are going now, probably you have a bachelor's at the age of 25. And you must have developed some sort of professional identity by 25. That's me being super ambitious because that is Akeem.
So under 25 Akeem.
You have an objective.
School leavers and they have yet to add skill sets to their resume. What do you expect to see?
No, you could develop skill sets while studying. Research is a big skill for a student. Being able to do things like report writing. You have to find the transferable skills and the things you've learned as a student that you can pull out. So I do a lot of work with UWE right now with their World of Work program. And that's what I tell the young people at UWE. Yes, you may not have the exact job experience right now, but pull out the things that you're good at while you're studying. So that can form a part of your objective. Also, you can state things like, I was the group leader. Well, please don't put it in the words that I'm using here. Please make sure it sounds collegiate, okay? But you put that you've held the role of debate supervisor where you're able to organize the team and you've had a year experience of this. So this shows me that you're thinking, you have a particular trajectory, you're good at research, you're good at collating information, you're good at data management. You're good at managing big data. A lot of people struggle with big data, but a lot of students are good at that because they're able to manage large bodies of information and present it in a succinct manner.
So this transferable skills that you're talking about, I think is quite interesting. How do you know which transferable skills you have attained over the years?
So I'll ask you, I'll throw this back at you, Samantha. Have you ever gone somewhere and met a manager who's probably like, let's say the head of procurement? Right? And you look at their background and you see that their resume says that they have a degree in agribusiness or a degree in food and nutrition. Have you ever seen that where you go into a company, see a person in one particular position, when you look at their background, it's completely something else?
Yes, yes.
Right? Now, in our local parlance, we'll say, oh God, square pegs in wrong holes. People, how that person get our work? You just hear that all the time. How that person get our work? But when you sit with a person and you talk with them about what they have to do in their current job, they know it 30. A lot of them, they know it very well because they're able to get the things from that degree and from the length and breadth of their experience that prepare them for where they're going into. For instance, I spoke just now about being technically sound and marrying that with project management, right? Now, what you can do is literally transfer into project management after that and become an international project manager. And you can add things to what you do to supplement your skills and to boost it on an international level if you want to migrate, right? Mm-hmm. Let's say you're, what technical area? What is something I get a lot of? Let's say marketing. You're really, really good at strategic marketing, right? And you've decided, hey, what I want to do PMP because I want to manage projects in marketing because that's the way international companies are going. Yeah. You can add international relations to that because you've now gotten a job abroad and you add international relations to that. You can become a correspondent for the organization. You could segue into another field and totally throw away the marketing part of what you started in. And your career can grow because you've now learned how to literally push forward your transferable skills. It's not easy, but it's very, very, very doable if you're able to dissect your career objectively.
Well, you know, that is interesting, Akeem, because yes, once somebody was basically kind of coaching me through writing a resume and they would talk about the transferable skills. They didn't use that term, but it seemed to me like, you know, I was like, are they buffing me up? You know, I think it was like a confidence thing. It was very strange to write those transferable skills, to put them on paper and to explain it in a way as you are explaining it. And some people may look at it that, but you didn't really do this. This is your interpretation.
Samantha, what you're explaining is indicative of a faulty resume writing process. And I'll tell you why. Clearly, that person took that document, knocked it up, and gave it back to the person. That's not the proper process to write a resume. as a master resume writer. Now, I get buff about this all the time.
Wait,
on social media,
just,
what this master thing means,
let me just
right?
clear it up, Akeem. The person didn't take the resume and buff it up and pass it to anybody. They were just...
No, they didn't?
No, they were just, okay. They were just looking at the resume
but
and
I'm
asking
certain
me
they,
to
I'm,
expand on the, okay. on the certain points that I put. And to me, it became a CV. Like
oh,
what you're
okay.
mentioning,
and it's lengthened.
Yes, but they were actually transferable skills that I would not have think of expanding on prior.
Right, but I will tell you this though: anytime you get back a resume or get feedback like that, it means the process was flawed. Right now, as a master resume writer, my process is different. Right, when you book my service on my website, you literally book a Zoom session with me immediately. Right, so we need to sit, we need to talk. Now, initially, those sessions used to go very long. Now I'm able to just do it in 30 minutes. And I need to understand three things mainly about you. What you did before, what you're doing now, and what you want to do. So I have to understand your past, present, and future, right? For me to write about you, I need to take you on the journey with me. So you need to dictate to me where you were, where you are, and where you're going. And that's how it's kind of easier for me to project what I need to put into this document. So when you get it, you're not surprised. However, if you're a good resume writer, of course, when people get a resume from you, it's not going to even look like what they had before. And they may be slightly confused. So I would make a joke and tell my people, you know, have a glass of water when you get your resume from me. Go through it. Give me a call. Let us talk about it if you have questions. But because I've taken you on the journey with me and you were a part of it, you're not going to be surprised about too much in it. So I don't get rewrites. I've not done a rewrite in over 10 years doing this.
All right. Excellent. Akeem Bradford is a certified master resume writer and HR professional for over 15 years. And he's here with us on The Digital World as we discuss Trinidad and Tobago's job landscape.
Talk is streaming at freedom106.5.com.
This is Freedom 106.5 FM and you are listening to The Digital World. I think we do have a caller who may have a question for Akeem. Hello and welcome.
Yeah, man. So how are we to prepare our young students to come out of graduate down high school, A-level, O-levels, and to sharpen their skills, you know, to let them be recognized that how our resume should really be written in terms of what is necessary for the employer. I'll go on listening.
Thank you. Akeem, you heard that?
I did. I think it's important to have students understand that it needs to be a little bit more than academia, all right? So it's not just the CXE results and the grades and that type of thing. It's definitely the leadership skills that you may have developed if you were a prefect or if you were on the debate team or if you did any volunteer work or if you've done things outside of that. Like, I would even dare say at that point you can get away with things like talents and that type of thing. But as you get older in your career, of course, a lot of these things tend to fall off. And then you're able to speak about actual professional deliverables that you can do.
All right.
Excellent.
So, team. So, you know what? This is going to, for our caller that just had called in, this is going to be, you know, a question for you that you're going to want to listen to. So, in this digital world that we are in, right, where do people go to find jobs? And you can probably give us some examples of local places that we would go to look for jobs. And where would you go to look for some international jobs? Where are we going to look for jobs nowadays?
Wow. I really do think a lot of the agencies do good work. I don't want to call any names to show any allegiances to anyone, mm-hmm. but there are definite agencies that do a lot of good work for people. Of course, you need to show interest as well. So mm-hmm. if you sign up with an agency, don't just say, well, I'm sitting and waiting on the phone to ring. No. 2 weeks has passed. Give them a call. Hey, my name is Samantha Best. I've sent off my resume to you all. Has anything come up in my field? Right? You can also leverage your LinkedIn. LinkedIn does have a lot of recruiters on there who are known, right? Who would be looking and that type of thing. So I think the agencies do a big part. Mm-hmm. The classifieds is a thing of the past, right? We chatted about that earlier. The classifieds is definitely, if I'm looking for an HR manager, I'm not putting an ad in the classifieds, right? That's a thing of the past. But there are job boards on LinkedIn as well that are really, really, really great at giving international jobs as well. The virtual landscape has increased. Mm-hmm. So you're able to apply for a job in Dubai. There are people who call themselves, I think the term is digital nomad.
Mm-hmm.
Is it right? A digital. I'm fascinated. I would love to be a digital nomad as well, but I can't have a nameless life. I'm sorry. My mom wouldn't like that too much. But definitely, I know a lot of people who do it. A lot of people who left their brick and mortar jobs in organizations and they're now virtual nomads. They work all over the world and they actually make a lot of money doing it. It's crazy.
Yeah, and you know, I'm glad that you brought up the fact that we have a lot more HR reps that are, you know, looking for talent on HR. So I know we're running out of time shortly, but what are some key tips for people listening to land their next job? What are some tips you can give the audience about, you know, what they could be doing to land that next job?
Right. Now, I know we want to be modern. We want to be all first world in 2022, but I think we need to not discount the value of traditional concepts. Mm-hmm. If you have to go to an interview, please be on time. Please present well. Mm-hmm. Please speak well. Please don't speak to me like we're on the corner on the call bot. Right. Make sure that you dress well. Present well. I just hired a young lady who lives Gasparillo. Mm-hmm. My office is in Port of Spain. She is literally on work before me. I'm there at 6:30. When I get there, I know she is there. Mm-hmm. Right? Yes, she's on probation. People are going to say, oh, she's doing that. No, and she's going to change later on. No. But I've seen a level of commitment from her in the interview that enamored me, that made me want to work with her. That's another thing I tell job seekers all the time. Mm-hmm. Make sure that when you present at the interview, you place yourself as someone that these people will want to work with. Right? I must want to see your face every day. Right? If I have to work with you, and I tell my HR assistant this all the time, right? I'm seeing you more than I'm seeing my family.
Right.
So I don't have to like you. We don't have to have drinks on a weekend.
Right.
But I have to work well with you. I have to respect you. You have to respect me. Not because I'm the manager and you're the assistant means that I just need to pass down orders from my ivory tower to you. No.
Right.
I need to respect your administrative function because I can't do it.
Mm.
I really can't.
Right, right.
No, I could if I have to.
Right, right.
If there's no one and I really have to, I will. But in general, you give respect to people so that, you know, the job function goes well. But on interviews, we really just want someone that we can work with.
Right.
That we want to work with. So trust and believe, at this point, everybody has the same degrees.
Yeah.
Everybody has the same qualifications.
Yeah.
Everybody has the same pieces of paper and letters behind their names.
Right.
Right. A lot of people thought I had an MBA for years, didn't know I didn't have one. I'm now doing it.
Right.
Right. Because of the level I operate and what I do. But yeah, just make sure that when you present on that interview,
yeah,
you're nervous, yes, but use your nerves to work for you. And nothing is wrong with saying, if you're in the right space, because trust and believe, every job is not for you.
Right.
Right. So once you're in the right space, because I've had a young lady tell me recently, Mr. Branford, I'm very nervous and her hands were shaking. And I walked over to her, gave her a bottle of water, and I said, let us pause for 5 minutes. This interview is done right now because I need you to present in your... It'll be unfair to you if you go home and feel like, oh my God, I was too nervous. And sometimes the nervousness of the candidate has nothing to do with you. That's their own thing. And you have to, as a good HR person, you need to kind of help them through that.
Right.
And then give them the opportunity to present well on the interview.
Right. So we're talking strategies to land the next job. If somebody right now, they might be in a situation where times are hard, prices have gone up.
Can't afford.
You know where I was going.
Yeah, because it's an investment.
Yeah,
it is.
What are some tips for somebody who can't afford a master resume writer right now?
Right. Here's what I'm going to tell you to do. Please do not use that red template or that green template in MS Word. Do not use it. Right. Mm-hmm. The reason why, you can look at it and see the structure, but when you send that green or that red template for me, I'm not going to read it. Because number one, it shows me you have not had any creativity or you've shown me no innovation in it at all. You've just copied and pasted what they had. The objective of a resume is to stand out, right? You're a standout from everyone else. You stand out based on your good content, yes, but the look and feel of your resume locally is very important. So if you've just given me a snapshot template, is that the quality of work you're going to produce for me going forward? So when I get your resume showing me good MS Office sophistication, good use of space, good use of font, good use of colors, that type of thing. If you pair gold with a darker color, it really pops.
And we do have a caller. Hello and welcome to the digital world. Good day.
Hi. Good afternoon. I want to thank this guy for the tips he's giving on resume writing. I also work in a field where I have to evaluate a lot of resumes, and I have gotten those red and green resumes from MS Word, and to be perfectly honest, I don't take them seriously at all. Right? So I just want to thank you for this session. I have called a few people and asked them to listen in because it was very, very informative and beneficial to us all. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm so glad we could have helped him out. That's going to cut down a lot of his work once he gets the correct resumes from now on. We also have another caller. Hello and welcome to the digital world.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
The fellow who's doing the interview and the resume, If somebody can all black, what's the position? You going to funeral?
I guess he's asking what color you should be wearing when you do go to an interview.
I hear you, sir. Nothing is wrong with the all black. But of course, oh my God, just don't wear it, all right? Just don't do it. But there are pastel type colors that you can wear to an interview that look well. There's the blues, the greens, the grays, right? Most people and our parents would have had an interview suit that they would wear to the interview. But I mean, I'm not saying that you're going to be harshly judged on color. I am not saying that, all right? Please remember that what you bring to the table is special. What you bring to the table is something that you alone have. So it's how you sell it in the interview. So you can get away with wearing the red dress or get away with wearing certain things. But I just say that there are a lot of traditional values that a lot of senior HR people have that you kind of, it doesn't benefit you to wear canary yellow or to wear fluorescent pink, these star colors that stand out for the wrong reasons. It doesn't benefit you in any way to wear it. So on the interview, just put your best foot forward in terms of how you look, how you dress. The all black is okay, but I would just say not to do it because black tends to look really funny sometimes if it's washed out or if it's something you have a lot and the seams were ironed and it looks a bit shiny. You don't want to have that look on the interview at all, because I remember interviewing a young lady some years ago who wore all black, was an all black outfit, but all we were focused on was the lining because she wore powder on her neck, on her chest as well. So there was this white lining. So it's confusing and it's distracting. I'm trying to get to know you and what you are bringing to my organization. I'm not trying to be focused on the fact that why did you put an entire container of talcum powder on your chest? There was no need for that. Not for the interview. No. There was no need for it. So you want to make sure that the interviewer is able to focus on the right thing. And that should be who you are, what you're bringing, your quality resume, if it's done by Branford HR Solutions, that type of thing.
Akeem, thank you so much for being with us. Akeem, an entire hour and a half, and we could still be talking about the job market and resumes. And yes, it's a lot. We probably are going to have to bring you back again. Karen?
Yeah, so Akeem, right before we go, where can we find you?
Wow, it's very easy to find me. You can find me at my website, which is my name, akeembranford.com, AKEEMBRANFORD, Bran as in the cereal and Ford as in the car. So akeembranford.com. You can look me up again on branfordhrs.com, BRANFORDHRS.com. My number is 377-3165. I am on LinkedIn. Add me. I'm very, very accessible. Right? Send me a message on LinkedIn. We'll be able to speak. My name is Akeem Branford on LinkedIn. My picture is me in a gray suit.
Akeem, thank you. I knew that when we were thinking about the job market, I knew we had to come and talk to you because there was a lot of information that I know you were going to bring to the table, especially when it came to you having both hats, both working with the employer side and the employee side, and just being able to edify the country on both of those roles. So thank you for coming in. This was amazing.
Thank you for having me, Samantha. It's really nice to meet you in person. So thank you for this as well.
What about me?
Well, Karen.
No, thank you.
Karen is always on LinkedIn. Karen. But it's really amazing to meet you, Samantha. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much, Akeem. It was indeed a pleasure. Akeem Branford, who is a certified master resume writer and HR professional for over 15 years. He has spent the last hour and a half with us on the digital world as we discussed Trinidad and Tobago, the job landscape, looking at the employers are how they are looking for job candidates. And if you happen to have been a job seeker, thank you so much, Akeem, once again, and safe travels. All right. And now we're ready for some digital value presented today by digital strategist Karen Rose.
Yes. So today I want to recommend a book, and I think it falls in nicely with the conversation we're having today. And this book is called Rise of the Youpreneur: The Definitive Guide to Becoming the Go-To Leader in Your Industry and Building a Future-Proof Business. Now, in particular, the reason why I want to recommend this book, and the book is by an author called Chris Ducker, is that if you take the lessons that he gives you in this book to build your name, he gives you some solid strategies and tools to not only be able to use in business, but you're also going to be building your name, and it's going to help you stand out in the job market. So that book title again is called Rise of the Youpreneur: The Definitive Guide to Becoming the Go-To Leader in Your Industry and Building a Future-Proof Business by Chris Ducker. But take those lessons, because if you put them into play, it's going to separate you in the job market as well.
All right, and where can we get this particular book?
You can grab this book on Amazon. It's in paperback, it's in Audible, and it's in Kindle as well.
All right, awesome. So once again, the title on this book, just in case someone was writing and not writing fast enough.
It is, I know it's a mouthful. It is Rise of the Youpreneur, the definitive guide to becoming the go-to leader in your industry and building a future-proof business by Chris Ducker. He also has a podcast where he gives a lot of free value as well. But if you Google Chris Ducker, that book will come up. It's a very popular book. And again, even if you're not in business, taking a lot of the lessons he talks about in that book can help you stand out in the job markets as well.
All right. So you've been listening to The Digital World here at Freedom 106.5 FM. Every Friday from 12 noon to 3 p.m., we talk tech, we talk modernization, we talk getting your business online, we talk e-commerce. We tell you all the good stuff that you need to know to start bringing in those dollars. All right. And thanks so much, Karen. I would... not ours. He is his own digital strategist, and he joins us for the 3 hours on a Friday from 12 noon to 3 p.m. Karen Rose. Karen?
Thank you. As always, it was a pleasure. Had a lot of fun. I think this conversation was needed. I know everybody listening in got a lot of value, and I cannot wait to do this next week with you again, Samantha.
Oh, thank you so much, Karen. And just a reminder about what value was brought to you today. We talked about Trinidad and Tobago and the job landscape with our master resume writer, Akeem Brantford. He's his own master resume writer. I'm trying to claim everybody. Once you come on the show here at Freedom 106.5
FM, part of the fam.
You belong to us, okay? Thank you very much, Hazra. She enjoyed the show as well. And to everyone here listening to Freedom 106.5 FM.
Listen and stream the all-new talk radio, Freedom 106.5, for the only talk that matter.